1-800-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Press Watch is next with Teresa.
So this is Christmas.
On Monday, December 24th, Prison Pipeline hosts will feature your holiday messages to your loved ones in prison, as well as greetings from prisoners for those on the outside. Email your message to kboppc@gmail.com or snail mail your holiday message to KBOO, Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Then tune in on Monday, December 24th at 6:30 p.m. Again, that's kboppc@gmail.com or mail KBOO, Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And happy holidays from the Prison Pipeline Collective every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO would like to give a special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast provided by the Clearing Cafe, a family-owned and operated cafe located at 2772 Northwest Thurman Street, open daily from 7 a.m. or earlier to 6:30 p.m. Lunch provided by Dots Cafe, a dive bar located in the heart of the Clinton Street neighborhood at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street, open daily from lunch to late night. Dinner provided by Escape from New York Pizza, located on 622 Northwest 23rd Avenue, serving New York-style pizza from house-made ingredients daily from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, today I'm going to be joined by an author, Alex Vitale, and I'm going to tell you about that in just a minute. But first I need to tell you that we are in a little bitty pledge drive, just 5 days. We're in the middle of it right now, and we need you to call. I need you to call. And I would like to first, while I am speaking, ask those of you who are longtime supporters of KBOO to call in and tag us. This is a little unorthodox. I want you to heat up the phone lines, break the ice by calling in and tagging us as I'm speaking, as I'm starting this interview. Don't worry, you won't miss it because it'll be available on kboo.fm about half an hour after I finish here. And I want you to call 877-500-KBOO, long-time supporters, and tag us for $10-$20 and just set that up, a one-time contribution, so that we can get to our goal of $30,000. And also, pay attention, if you are one of the three people who are going to get in and get this book, we'll be opening the lines up for that shortly. But right now I'm joined by a professor of sociology at Brooklyn College, a New York State Advisory Commission member of the U.S. Commission of Civil Rights, a contributor to the New York Times and to The Nation, Alex Vitale, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Are you there, Alex?
Vitale,
okay, Alex Vitale. Thank you. And the name of the book is The End of Policing. I've been looking over it, and I think it's very much something that needs to be in everyone's library. And so I checked, and I found that it is indeed available in the library system here in Portland. But it's one of those books that will make you think comprehensively, because obviously Alex Vitale has thought and researched very comprehensively on this subject. So this is an argument and a conclusion that I think you need to be a part of. And so I'd like to ask you, Alex, first, what is the actual function versus the imagined function of United States policing?
Well, and it's not just American policing. Policing in general has always been a tool to manage the consequences of inequality and exploitation. So if we look at the origins of police forces around the world, we see that they're developed in relationship to colonialism, in managing the new industrial urban working class, and in the management of slavery. And while many police officers wake up every morning thinking about how to help people, the fundamental nature of the kind of help that they can provide is arresting people, using force against people. And this is not the way that we should actually address the kinds of problems that we experience in society.
And this is something that you elaborate quite well in the book. I was impressed at the level of detail, and it really does make the argument very well that we need something else. Well, I want to ask you about the way it is now, though. Recently, the Portland Police Association head was quoted in the local media saying that Portland, Oregon is a cesspool. And I think in the context, we knew what he meant by that. Can you talk about warrior mentality on our police departments and us versus them thinking?
Yeah, certainly. I think we can see this most clearly in a kind of what I call a thin blue line worldview that dominates a lot, not all, but a lot of thinking within policing. And this is this very kind of simplistic worldview that says the world is just divided up into these two camps of good people and bad people. And it's the job of the police to kind of decide where people are on either side of that line and then to take punitive action and sort of obliterate the people who are on the bad side of that line. And this simplistic worldview kind of loses track of the fact that people are much more complicated than that. Good people do bad things, and a lot of people who are a source of disorder or discomfort for people in the community, not to mention who produce serious harms, you know, are often in that situation because of dynamics that could be dealt with in a much more humane way. There are folks who have a drug problem, who have a mental health problem, who are experiencing homelessness. And this is a huge amount of what police do, is manage these essentially social problems. And this is certainly the case in Portland, where rather than really aggressively dealing with things like the affordable housing crisis, we see these constant waves of attempts to criminalize homelessness, to manage the problem with aggressive policing.
Where do you live?
I live in Brooklyn.
Okay, interesting that you know about Portland, and I think you have the nail on the head there. Yes, we have some problems here with our police. That's a certainty. I want to ask you, please talk about the history of policing. Talk about slave patrols.
Well, you know, you sometimes hear in certain activist circles, well, police are just an extension of slave patrols. And that's not so true in places like the American Northeast, where it had more to do with labor management. But in cities like Savannah, New Orleans, Charleston, South Carolina, slavery was an urban phenomenon. And it involved slaves working outside the home of their owners for wages. And this meant that there was a large, mobile, urban slave population. And this terrified whites, who in some of these places were actually a minority of the residents. They were deeply concerned about slaves learning to read, forming religious groups, or enacting uprisings. And so what I found was that the first American police force, and in some ways the first police force that I could find anywhere that fit the kind of standard definition of a modern police force, was created in Charleston, South Carolina in the 1780s. And the reason that it's never discussed in policing textbooks and classrooms is because their primary law enforcement duty was managing this mobile slave population.
This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. It's about 9 minutes after the top of the hour. And I want to check with the engineer and see how close we are to being joined by Pledge Central, Membership Central. And all right, we're getting that together. So I want to tell you in advance the number to call with your comments, and questions is 503-231-8187. But first I want to go to another question. What function do you think does corporate media, TV news, what function does it execute in the public desire for the repressive order that we have with the police?
Well, I think that the repressive order is, of course, broader than just the police. You know, our entire criminal justice system has become a kind of gigantic revenge factory. And part of this is that our politicians, news media, and many others to frame so many of our social problems as the result of individual and group moral failure. And so when we define our problems in this way, it opens the door to repressive, coercive, punitive solutions, rather than acknowledging the role that things like market failure and austerity politics play in producing these problems. And the last thing the advertisers on network television want is television shows that talk about the failures of the labor market, the failures of housing markets, as being the root of so many of the social problems we face. So these shows, sometimes in direct collaboration with police departments, tend to define crime as either the result of super predators, you know, super serial killers, or a kind of broadly degraded population of criminals that will only ever respond to the, you know, violence of the police.
So that brings me to talk about whiteness and that sort of thing. And we'll need to get to that in just a moment, though, because first we need to raise some funds. This book that I'm talking about with the author, Alex Vitale, is available from us. And you can get it by calling 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. One more time. That's the last four digits spell KBOO, by the way. 877 is toll free. 500-5266. And now I'm joined by Membership Central, and let's talk about getting some members right now. And I'm talking about getting you to call us right now.
Good morning, Teresa. This is Ray, and I'm here with my friend Ken on this very short holiday membership drive here at KBOO. And I'm going to repeat that number you just gave, 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm. You know, this is an incredibly powerful array of programs this morning. Go back to the last one with Joanne Hardesty talking about the war on drugs, and now your interview with Alex Vitale about the end of policing, you know, criminalizing homelessness. These are the kinds of topics that you're not going to get in detail in commercial media. They're unwilling to take on these controversial topics because they're at the beck and call of their advertisers. Here at KBOO, we're not at the beck and call of anybody except the community. So we're asking you to take a moment, give us a call at 877-500-5266, and show your commitment to your community radio station. Think about this. Joanne Hardesty, a councilwoman direct, is now back in your ear every week here at KBOO. Where else can you hear that kind of detailed analysis of what's really going on? So again, 877-500-5266. And Ken, I think we have an opportunity for listeners to get a copy of Mr. Vitale's book, don't we?
Yes, Derek Crooks, our public affairs director, just came over, and I have the sheet of paper. It's $70, the minimum pledge of $70 a year. And we got to work out what that is divided by 12. I'm not quick enough, but Ray's got his phone out. The End of Policing by Alex Vitale. Teresa, before we went to this break here for our winter membership drive, she was starting to talk about whiteness, and that was something, as I was listening to Joanne Hardesty's program, that's $6 and change, right?
$6 will do it.
About $6 a month will do it. I was listening to Joanne Hardesty's program, Commissioner-elect Joanne Hardesty, and KBOO host. As Ray mentioned, she was had to go off the air while she was running. That was due to FCC regulations, but she's back. She's back on the air on KBOO, and she'll be in City Hall starting in January. So that book, The End of Policing, Joanne was talking about, I think about 54% of the stops police stops in Portland were to people of color, and yet people of color represent a very much smaller percentage of the population.
Something like 7%.
Yeah, well under 10.
7%,
yeah.
Teresa?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so this is a block of programming you're getting this morning, which I think is just pure KABU, from Joanne's program to Teresa's program, Press Watch, and the subject we're talking about today is policing, and a number of other things, policing in regards to the homeless and people of color. So to become part of that, to support programming like that, we come to you just a few times a year. The number, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm, Ray.
Yeah, and that's right, Ken. And just again, once to remind listeners that in this very short year-end program, we're looking for you to help us get started and get ready for another aggressive year in 2019 of public affairs programming, like the hard-hitting Voices from the Edge, like the hard-hitting Press Watch, like talk shows, talk radio like Abe and Joe and Positively Revolting. This is your community radio station at its best, dealing with the issues that we're facing on the street here in Portland. So we're asking you to pick up the phone now, give us a call, and show your support. It doesn't have to be a lot. We really depend on our small donors to show their commitment and keep us going, keep us funded, give us a steady revenue stream so we continue to reinvest in citizen, or as we were talking about it earlier, street journalism. For $6 a month, you can get a copy of The End of Policing by Alex Vitale. We only have a limited number of copies, so I would urge you to pick up the phone and give a call right now, 877-500-5266. And also, if you'd prefer, online at kboo.fm. And as always, we would invite you, if you're in a neighborhood, to come and stop in person. We're just on Southeast 8th, just below Bernstein.
Right.
I'm thinking about Flashpoints
yes,
already.
Yes, we're in the Jewish neighborhood here.
I'm thinking about our next show. But we're right just below Burnside, right next to Doug Fir. And come on in. We'd be happy to share our... today we have burritos. We'd be happy to share our burritos and coffee with you and show you around and show you where your money goes.
And that money that you give us, that our members give us and have given us for the past 50 years is about 80% of our yearly operating budget. So give us a call. We'll return to Teresa and Press Watch, but that number, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm.
Thank you very much. Well, I did hear a call, so that means that there may be only two copies of the book left. And if you've listened to me for a long time, and I've been broadcasting for 30 years, and you trust me, then I would say trust me on this. I've read this book, and if you are concerned with police, you need to have a copy. So don't delay. Call in 877-500-5266. We've only got three copies available, and I think you're going to want it. So, Alex Vitale, thank you for staying on the line. I want to talk about Ferguson. I want to talk about what functions the police serve in the enforcement of whiteness. And often, when I talk about whiteness, I use a little an example from South Africa, in which the government of Japan approached the government of South Africa and said, "We want our people to be treated in a top-notch way in your divided society, and so we want you to designate us as white." And the South African government did designate all Japanese citizens as white people in South Africa under apartheid. And I bring that up because whiteness is at its core a system of exclusion and a system, therefore, of oppression. And you talk, Alex Vitale, in your book about this. You say at the root, policing is a tool for maintaining inequality. Can you talk about Ferguson, inequality, whiteness, and policing?
Sure. I think, you know, one of the points of the book is to try to push back against some of the superficial reforms that we often see enacted by elected officials, police commissioners, etc. And one of the ones that I really dislike is implicit bias training. And implicit bias training is this idea that the problems of race and policing are the result of totally unconscious and unintentional racial bias at the level of individual officers. And this just seems ludicrous to me and also completely unsupported by the evidence. The fact is that there is both explicit bias in policing, but more importantly, the racism, if you will, is baked into the institution. And, of course, that was a huge part of what was going on in Ferguson. Ferguson was a small community that was racially divided, and whites controlled the political apparatus and the policing, and they basically used the police as both a tool of social control and revenue generation. And they did this by targeting primarily the non-white community. And while there was racial bias in that, even if the officers were enforcing the laws uniformly, the reality is that the non-white residents were poorer than the white residents. And as a result, they were more likely to have vehicles that were out of certification in some way, to have an unfixed broken taillight, a lack of an inspection sticker, etc. And so they are always going to be criminalized more. And the impact of that criminalization is going to be felt more profoundly. A rich person that gets a $100 ticket can pay it without a lot of hassle. But for a poor person, that $100 ticket may be unpayable. And then it becomes a warrant. They get arrested the next time they interact with the police, escalating court fines, et cetera, until it drives people into bankruptcy, which was what was happening in Ferguson. So as long as we don't acknowledge the profound inequalities that are the starting point for any conversation about policing, we're going to reproduce the unequal effects of policing.
Thank you. I have to ask who the police actually do protect and serve. In my case, I have almost never had peace restored nor property returned by police. I can think of one instance in my 20 years of driving buses. I drove for the local TriMet bus service and before that for the public schools. I can think of one time in which a situation was resolved by police, but that's only because the person in question actually punched a cop. They didn't actually come to help me, but once they got punched, well, that took care of the situation from my end. Other than that, never got help. I've defended myself as a bus driver, as a transgender bus driver. And when it comes to assaults, the only serious assault in which I was unable to defend myself was when I was assaulted by police who saw my transgenderism as criminal. And I want to talk with you in a minute a little bit about that. It seems that police seem to see all variants and certainly all dissent as essentially criminal. When my car was stolen, I recovered it myself. I drove off thieves from my property with threats. So who and what is protected and served by the police as they currently exist?
Well, I think some people think that because the police, you know, enforce the law and respond to emergency complaints, that they are the only sort of reasonable tool that can be used to produce public safety. And some people will go a little bit further and say, well, if we could get the police to quit harassing homeless people and, you know, waging the war on drugs, they could focus on serious crime, as if that's something they can actually effectively deal with. But in fact, there are a lot of questions about really how effective they are at doing any of this. First of all, most line police officers have very little to do with serious crime. They spend their time dealing with homeless folks, mental health calls, et cetera, young people on the street corner. And the reality is that most serious crimes are never even reported to the police. Most of them, therefore, are not solved. Many are not even investigated, especially property crimes. The majority of property crimes are never even really investigated. So this whole idea of the police officer as crime fighter is really more of a myth than reality. And I would just recommend Beth Ritchie's book, Arrested Justice, that looks at the ways in which women in particular are not made safer by the interventions of the police. Especially, and Andrea Ritchie's book makes this case as well, especially for women of color.
Well, now, today on KBOO, we're doing some special programming in concert with a local business, a hip-hop dispensary, the Green Hop Dispensary. And it is a black-owned dispensary, and they're saying, dare to end the war on drugs. And we're going to be broadcasting live from Green Hop tonight, and that includes the news. Green Hop on 5515 Northeast 16th is where that will be happening. And so I want to ask you, what has been the effect of the combination of the drug war, the war on marijuana, and policing?
Well, I mean, it's a disaster. We've had a war on drugs for over 40 years now in various forms, and drugs are cheaper and easier to get than they've ever been. Anyone can get any kind of drugs they want, anytime they want them. You know, almost every young person in our society knows who they would call to get the ball rolling on obtaining illegal drugs. The war on drugs has never been about public health or public safety in any real way. We know that within the Nixon White House, people have come forward and said that this was all an attempt to signal to white Southern voters that the Republican Party was going to be the party to keep blacks in their place in the wake of the Civil Rights Movement. And drugs was a way to do this because the feds had historically been kept out of law enforcement. It was a state concern.
Didn't Nixon say something specific about that?
Well, Nixon, yeah, he said a lot of things, but he said, look, drugs cross state lines, international lines, so we can get into the drug war business as a way of expanding the federal law enforcement role, as a way of signaling to white voters that we're going to be, you know, the party of white racial resentment. And members of his administration have come forward and documented this fact. And so so many of the harms that we associate with illegal drugs are actually produced by their prohibition. And a scheme to legalize, regulate, and in some cases just deregulate and decriminalize drugs would produce public health outcomes that are far better than what we have today. And if we look at Portugal, which has decriminalized all drugs, HIV rates, overdose rates have gone down. Usage has not gone up, and civilization as we know it has not collapsed. It's time to get the police out of the drug business.
You know, it seems to me, especially since marijuana has been legalized here in Oregon, that the suppression of its use really was the main source of the harm, as you say. It seems to me that ice cream could be substituted for marijuana, and we would have the same story to tell, right up to drive-by shootings, probably, at some point. National professionalization funds. You write in your book that there have been various attempts to make policing better. And one of those has been the occasional dispensing, at least since the 60s, of professionalization funds under various aegises, diverted once they were received, however, to SWAT militarization. So I want to ask you, what implacable desire in society and local government is leading to this repeated phenomenon? It seems that at least the local governments really want to have a heavy-handed approach.
Well, it is a bipartisan issue, right? This process of turning social problems into moral failures, into issues of moral failure, and then criminalizing them is a national bipartisan problem. We're hearing more talk about the problem of over-incarceration, which is great, and there are these proposals for kind of marginal reductions in sentencing, et cetera, But none of this gets at the core issue, which is our over-reliance on policing to address every problem under the sun. And so that's really the direction that we need to go in, is asking our elected officials, why is it that when we have a drug overdose problem, the bulk of the resources go into policing instead of drug treatment on demand, safe injection facilities, needle exchange, et cetera?
Not to mention a society that's worth participating in. Well, I want to ask you some more questions, but I think right now I see Membership Central is ready to raise some funds for KBOO. And so as we go over, as Membership Central comes over here to join us, I want to talk to you specifically about who is it that needs to join KBOO. It's got to be you, because you've listened this long, because you care, and you care in a deep way about what the society's problems are. You want to be informed about it so that you're actually useful to those around you who want to know what's going on and what to do about it. This book, The End of Policing, really is about ending policing, which I think would be a terrific idea, not just a utopian one. I think we're creating more problems with our police than we are solving, and the book makes the point very well. You can still probably get a copy. You'll need to call 877-500-5266, and for those of you who have called in a little too late for those three copies, I would like to suggest that you get something that is very useful to you in this weather that we're experiencing today, and that would be a KBOO hoodie. It's we've got your size. It's $25 a month contribution. This is the only way you can get one. And other KBOO people will see your hoodie and know where you're coming from and how you got it. It's a great icebreaker in that regard. 877-500-5266. We need to raise $1,000. That means need to get you to take action right now. Spend that 3 minutes on the phone with us at 877-500-5266. Get the book or get the hoodie, but in any event, call us right now. Make the phone ring. Get us excited right here in Membership Central. Right, Ken?
Oh, that's right, Teresa. I'm here with my friend Ray, and it is our winter membership drive. Teresa, we have two copies of The End of Policing by Alex Vitale left, and that's for a $70 a year minimum pledge. Ray and I worked that out. We rounded up a little, $6 a month. You can do that through credit card, debit card, or electronic funds transfers. We have volunteers here at the phone, very friendly, very happy to guide you through the process. It shouldn't take too long. We come to you just a few times a year. About 80% of our operating budget each year comes from you, the members. It's been doing that. We've been doing that for the past 50 years. Amazing. KBOO started back in 1968, and it's been listener-sponsored all that time. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to become a new member, to renew your membership, or you can go online at kboo.fm.
And Ken, you know, it's kind of interesting, Teresa speaking to Alex Vitale about The End of Policing, and I'm trying to imagine any other radio station where you would hear that kind of discussion. Can you imagine a commercial radio station talking about the end of policing? I can't.
Or any media in Portland. In fact, we watch the news at night. Basically, you turn on the news at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. Most of it is now toy drives. that's a good cause, right? But it's not really the news.
It's a good cause, but it's not the only cause. And we'd like to make KBOO one of your causes this holiday season. So please give us a call, 877-500-5266. We also want to take a moment and thank Denise from Southeast Portland, who is a new member. Thank you so much for calling in, Denise. And this is your chance to join Denise and at the same time pick up a copy of this very interesting and very informative and very important book, The End of Policing by Alex Vitale. $6 a month. We can charge it to your credit card. It helps us to, you know, maintain our budget and plan for 2019. So $6 a month or $70 one-time pledge will get you that book. Call 877-500-5266. I'm going to repeat it. Some people are driving. Maybe this way we can set it in their memory, Ken. 877-500-5266. Or if you're at your computer, you can just go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. But whichever way you do it, please take just a moment and show your support with a little year-end gift for your community radio station.
It's the giving season, and really this is a very short membership drive for KBOO. We started on Tuesday. Ray and I kicked it off, and we end of day on Saturday, so it's just a five-day drive. A lot of times we'll go up to 2 weeks for our spring and fall drive. So
yeah, it's
winter,
just a little bitty drive, and this is the only press
one.
Watch.
The only press watch. Actually, Teresa, this is probably my very favorite morning on KBOO programming with your show, Per Fogarain show, Flashpoints, Words and Pictures. We have Radio Zine today, but most Thursdays it's Between the Covers, author interviews. That's just a taste of the diversity of programming that you get on KBOO. Again, all brought to you by your funds, by your giving at 877-500-5266.
And, you know, earlier Joanne Hardesty was in here with her discussion about the war on drugs and the need to really end that, especially the biases that implies in that war on drugs. And I just wanted to remind folks that today we're working with the dispensary, Green Hop Dispensary, and there, I'll get the address in just a moment, but the Green Hop Dispensary, all purchases today, Green Hop Dispensary will make a contribution in your name to KBOO, so yet another opportunity to benefit. We talked about the book, the Alex Vitale book, The End of Policing, for $6 a month. But if you make a purchase at Green Hop Dispensary, they'll also make a contribution to us.
And they've also provided us with the world's largest joint, which we just lit here in the studio. It's getting pretty sick. I'm making that up, actually. They are at 5515 Northeast 16th.
Oh, thank you, Teresa. And you burst our bubble there. We were looking forward to that world largest joint. But again, please give us a call here, 877-500-5266, or stop in person. We'd love to see you. We'd love to show you around, show you where your money goes. Remember, this is a station that's basically run, managed by and run by volunteers with a skeleton staff who probably are, for the most part, working out of the goodness of their heart. So we need your support. We need your help. Please pick up the phone. Call us at 877-500-5266.
And those volunteers, we have about 450 or so, Ray. As volunteers, we don't get paid at KBOO. There's just a small staff here that actually gets paid. So we're run pretty much on passion, commitment, activism, love of music, love of public affairs, love of interviews with authors. Just an incredibly diverse array of programming on KBOO. You won't find that anywhere else. So give us a call to help support that, 877-500-5266, or go to our website at kboo.fm.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Ray. Thanks, Alex Vitale, for staying on the line. And Membership Central, I believe that we'll join you at about 54 after and wrap up to the top of the hour with you with some more fundraising. If you're still wanting to call in while we're doing this show, don't forget you can get, if you miss anything, you can hear it on kboo.fm afterwards on under Press Watch, kboo.fm/PressWatch. And the number to call right now, 877-500-5266. You do need a hoodie, and those of you who have been longtime supporters, I think, will need to up your pledge to that $25 level so that you can get a hoodie. Do it right now, 877-500-5266. Well, Alex, one of the interesting aspects of the book, I thought, was talking about the Cold War efforts to export U.S.-style policing as, you know, basically defenders, as you say, of maldistribution of wealth and power under capitalism to countries within the U.S. orbit as part of the Cold War. And now we are experiencing blowback from that as people who were, you know, dispensed to various thugs under Kissinger, et cetera, have trained our police. And the quote from your book is, "Suppressing social movements through counterintelligence, militarized riot suppression techniques." Just a phrase from a sentence that I read in there. And it seems that here in Portland, we have experienced a great deal of that. Whenever we come out with our peaceful descent into the streets, we are confronted with this, if it were not so dangerous, it would be hilarious, overreaction of police wearing this thick Kevlar top to bottom, black colored suits with face shields. And it's as if they expect to be facing the hordes out of out of Lord of the Rings or something, and we're just standing there going, nah, 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 nah. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, first, let me recommend a brand new book that's come out called Violence Work by Nicole Siegel at the University of Indiana. And it looked at the so-called Office of Public Safety, which was the sort of center of the Cold War effort to export American policing around the world. But really what it did is it melded domestic policing with military efforts, with overseas policing by undemocratic regimes, death squads, etc., and the constant revolving door of personnel between local police departments, foreign training operations, private security companies, etc. So it's really the best example we have of this kind of corrupt process of turning policing, as it always has been in a sense, into this kind of counterinsurgency operation. So yeah, Portland's got a long history of heavy-handed protest policing, a real intolerance of dissent, and it is, of course, reflective of the fact that you have active social movements there that are capable of producing, disorderly, contentious demonstrations, and that are viewed as a real threat to existing social relations there. And so police have largely been unleashed, not just with robo-cop kind of armor, but a really extensive use of pepper spray, using bicycles as weapons to destabilize protests. And I think more work needs to be done to look at the role of undercover officers in Portland, not just in terms of gathering data, but as potential, infiltrators and disruptors of
provocateurs. Yeah.
There. Yep.
Well,
not just provocateurs, but actual, disseminators of false information. Et cetera.
This is something that we often talk about here on KBOO, and we also talk about their apparent alliance with white supremacist gangs, notably the Proud Boys, who they just seem to adore, and who are coddled when they come actually across state lines into Portland, literally to cause trouble. And in one famous incident, to bring weapons up apparently for a sniper's nest in the top of a parking garage. They are not prosecuted for this sort of thing. Far from it. Can you talk about the relation of American police and the white supremacist movement?
Well, this is nothing new in two ways. One is that political policing is never politically neutral. It always has a point of view. It always is much more concerned about challenges to the state from the left, from racial minorities, and it's also not new in the sense that political policing has always worked in collaboration with right-wing movements, whether it was during the Cold War era, during the World War I era, where suppression of dissent was widespread in the United States. They've always collaborated with right-wing movements to help, for instance, produce enemies lists, then give those lists to private groups who go out and try to pressure employers to get people fired, leaking information to right-wing groups that then go and bust up meetings or produce counter-protests. So rather than spending a lot of time trying to make protest policing, political policing more politically neutral, I think we need, massive restrictions on the use of police in the political arena.
Can you talk about that as a corollary? Can you talk about the Greensboro incident?
Well, the Greensboro incident is just another example of police collaboration with right-wing groups in which...
Was that the late 70s?
Yes, and so folks there were organizing against the Klan, and the police actually had infiltrators within the Klan who directly participated in a drive-by shooting incident of these people who were mobilizing against the Klan. So the idea that the police didn't know this was going to happen, couldn't have warned people, seems really ludicrous. And, of course, they never take the kinds of repressive measures against these right-wing movements that they do towards left-wing ones.
Now, the president was a real estate mogul for many years and was known for participating in something that you mentioned in the book, the super predator myth, part of the racist ideas that are brought to bear along with pseudo-academic works like Murray and Herrnstein's Bell Curve. I believe Trump promoted the idea that the idea of wilding and a group of young black men were, or actually their boys were falsely accused of such incidents. Can you talk about resurgent U.S. white racism, Trumpism, and policing? Where are we going now?
Yeah, well, those are big questions. I mean, as much as we want to link Trump to these kinds of caustic and reactionary ideas around criminal justice, it was the Clinton administration that really embraced the super predator myth and acted on it by radically expanding the criminal justice system, ramping up the war on drugs, expanding the federal death penalty, and giving billions of dollars to build more prisons and hire more police. So this is really a bipartisan problem. And as much as we should be deeply concerned about the intensification of sort of fascistic tendencies in the federal government, you know, most policing is a local matter, and there remain, you know, deep embedded problems in these institutions that predate the rise of the kind of Trump right wing.
Speaking as a transgender woman, a white transgender woman, I am now, because of this phenomena, because of this intensification, I'm now being very careful in various settings. I've actually gotten to the point where I watch around corners very carefully when I exit bathrooms. And I know that this phenomenon with the police is only going to get worse. As I mentioned before, I've actually been taken in. There was an attempt to put me down for 10 years for being transgender. That was back in 07. With this going on, I can only imagine how bad it is for black men and for people who speak Spanish under this regime and under the policing that is increasing with this sort of phenomenon. Can you talk about whiteness policing and immigrations and custom enforcement police and the way that they are being used as flying troops by Trump?
Well, first, let me just say that I was have known Dean Spade a long time, who's been an important activist in the transgender movement, and you know, we were involved in some activism around access to public facilities here in New York many years ago, and this, you know, really helped shape my understanding about the kinds of civil liberties and human rights challenges that are faced by that community. And while we've made some progress in some parts of the country, you know, this remains an area of deep concern, and where I see it most regularly is in the equating of a transgender identity with sex work, which has been highly criminalized. And so while we have problems like driving while black, we also have, you know, walking while transgender is enough to invite police harassment and interference. But I think you're absolutely right to point at the immigration issue. In terms of the Trump administration, that's the population that is most at risk, has experienced the most increased harassment and criminalization. And we live in a society now where the border is everywhere, and border enforcement is occurring in communities all across the country. So as much as we have this talk about the wall and sending troops to the border, what we're seeing is ICE operating in communities all across the country, you know, criminalizing Latinos in particular, but others as well, and doing so in a way that destabilizes community, tears apart families, and is fundamentally morally indefensible, in my view. And I argue in the book that we should return to what was essentially the de facto case of the 1970s and 80s when I grew up in Texas, which were open borders. Anybody who was sufficiently motivated could pretty easily cross the border in both directions, and civilization did not collapse as a result of this. In fact, it was a source of incredible economic dynamism, that these immigrant populations have revitalized entire communities in many rural parts of the country, as well as inner city communities, and that we should embrace this process instead of criminalizing it.
Well, now that you've said that, what can be gained by eliminating police and instituting restorative justice, harm reduction, legalization, and what examples can you point to?
Well, you know, I've tried to point to a few. You know, Portugal decriminalized all drugs and has had good outcomes from that. New Zealand has decriminalized sex work, and they're very happy with the results of that, getting police out of the sex work business. There are really important movements underway across the country to get police out of schools, and people can look at the Advancement Project that recently issued a report about these struggles across the country, and they make a very strong case, as I have tried to as well, that we don't need reforms to school policing. It's just a terrible idea that invites the mistreatment and criminalization of young people, especially young people of color and young people with disabilities. So whether it's legalizing drugs, getting police out of schools, creating real community-based mental health services, this is what police reform really looks like, not de-escalation training, body cameras, and implicit bias training. Those strategies don't work. They just re-empower and re-legitimate policing, and they don't really do anything to make communities and individuals stronger and more resilient.
I have to agree with what you're saying there. By the way, there may be a copy of the book left, 877-500-5266. If you're someone who researches this sort of thing, I think you need a copy of this book. If you can't get one from us, I noticed that, of course, it's on Amazon, but the local union-owned Powell's Books has a couple dozen copies as well. I went into
and
the...
You can get it directly from Verso.
Verso.
Books.
Okay, which is publishing
Verso
it.
Books.
And I recommend it. I was talking with a sex worker the other day, and she told me that with sex work criminalized in Portland, it's common, and I imagine it's common elsewhere, for police to pick up a sex worker simply for sex. I mean, they pick up a sex worker, they intend to bust her, and they tell her that, you know, she can get off for sex, and that's how they get it. It just sort of, as you say, encourages corruption. And when it comes to reforming police, I think your idea of ending police is really where we need to go. Here in Portland, recently there was an effort by the mayor, commissioner of police, to create an unarmed police force. But I would argue that we need, because of this dynamic which you define, of the police essentially being present, being armed, and being who they are because of this social effort to enforce systems of inequality. What we really need is equality and not police. And I think it would be a great start to actually, and I think eventually we'd save money. I would like to chart it out somehow. I think that here in Portland and elsewhere in the United States, we would actually save money by pensioning off the police, by actually closing down the police department and creating something else that is not about enforcing inequality, that is not about enforcing whiteness, that is not about enforcing people out of town because they're houseless and that sort of thing. Can you comment on that? We're running up to the top of our available time right now.
Well, I think, you know, you've summarized the situation, that we don't need nicer police and better trained police. We need to directly address these regimes of inequality and exploitation that drives so many of the social problems that have become criminalized. And so just trying to work with communities to direct their political energies at demanding humane and effective solutions to their community problems is the way to go.
You know, one thing we didn't get to, I wanted to... Let me ask you real quickly, if you can, comment on cops in schools. The Portland Public School Board just designated $1.2 million, sadly, for police in the school system. What is that likely to do?
Well, it's just a terrible idea. It's going to lead to increases in suspensions and expulsions and increased criminalization of young people. And it does not make schools any safer. People say, well, what about the shooting incidents? Well, you know, remember Columbine High School? There were armed police at Columbine High School. There were armed police in Portland, in Parkland, Florida, when that shooting happened. There's very little evidence that school policing produces positive outcomes. What it does is it makes people, children, feel insecure. That's what the research shows. And it results in treating them in these degrading fashions. And again, it's a way of shifting the burden for social problems away from government and onto the individuals who are criminalized. And it's just a terrible idea.
Thank you very much. The author is Alex Vitale. The book is End of Policing, published by Verso. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Alex Vitale, thank you very much for joining us today, and congratulations on the book.
So much.
Thank you. And now we are joined by Membership Central. We are in a very limited membership drive. Nonetheless, it's very essential. We've got to have this money. We need to raise $30,000. I need to raise $1,000 right now. No kidding. There are a few of you I happen to know listening to me right now who have hundreds of thousands of dollars in your bank account. So I'm shouting out to you right now. How about kicking down $1,000 right now? You can do it. I know you can. And you've done it before, some of you. Well, and thank you very much for that. This would be a good time. We need to catch up to that $30,000 goal. I think we're about halfway there. And right now, you need to call 877-500-5266 and tell us what you can do. It is often suggested that you pledge 1 hour's wage per month for us. I think that's a good rule stick. It doesn't have to be exactly that. I also want to remind you that even though the books are probably gone, we have the KBOO hoodie. For those of you who just want to get your feet wet, call in and we'll tell you just how inexpensive it is. It's really just absurdly inexpensive to become a member with a monthly contribution and just get a t-shirt or a shopping bag that we have available for you. I think you'll like having a KBOO bag. But the hoodie is what I want to emphasize right now. $25 a month. A lot of you have been contributing for $10 a month, $15 a month for years. Thank you so much. And that is sufficient, surely. But I think that you will enjoy having the KBOO hoodie, and we need the cash. So call us right now, 877-500-5266. Ken and Ray are here.
Thank you, Teresa. And before we go any further, I want to thank you for that terrific edition of Press Watch, the discussion with Alex Vitale, the author of The End of Policing. It was really, I think, informative for all of us and shows a direction that is consistent with KBOO, your community radio station. So I want to echo Teresa's comments and suggest that you pick up the phone now. Give a call, 877-500-5266. $25 a month will get you the very handsome, in fact, very fashionable KBOO hoodie. Not only will it keep you warm and dry, but it will show your friends and neighbors that you support your community radio station. So please give a call, 877-500-5266.
And Ray, we also have one copy left of Alex Vitale's book, The End of Policing. That's for a minimum pledge of $70 a year, about $6 a month. One copy left, and that's the discussion that we just heard on Teresa's show. We'd also like to give a thank you to Joe, to Denise, and to Francis. Guys, thanks very much. KBOO really depends on people like you, on our members. About 80% of our operating budget comes from you. The number to call is 877-500-5266, or you can go online at KBOO.com. PressWatch.fm.
And this is it. This is the only time Press Watch is going to be on this little bitty pledge drive. So if you want to support Press Watch, if you want to support the sort of long-term dissenting informed radio, you need to call right this second. You need to pull over if you're driving. You need to go out of your cubicle if you're working. Call us, 877-500-5266. You, right now, 877-500-5266. Why? Because you have always had the shoulders to do the work that needs to be done in the society. And you know that having a community radio with this sort of programming on has its effect on society. There's the music, which means you've just got 60 seconds to call. Ken and Ray, thank you so much for your
help
here.
Thank you, Teresa.
I want to hear you call, 877-500-5266. You can still get in. It's just 3 minutes on the phone with us. And just we fill out a form. We send it to you. It's very easy to do. That $25 monthly contribution gets you the KBOO hoodie. You'll feel so much warmer in and outdoors with your hoodie. 877-500-5266. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in the Cascadia region. Stay tuned for more incredible programming. And we'll go out to you via KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea.
Would like to give a special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast provided by the Clearing Cafe, a family-owned and operated cafe located at 2772 Northwest Thurman Street. Open daily from 7 a.m. or earlier to 6:30 p.m. Lunch provided by Dots Cafe, a dive bar located in the heart of the Clinton Street neighborhood at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street. Open daily from lunch to late night. Dinner provided by Escape from New York Pizza, located on 622 Northwest 23rd Avenue. Serving New York-style pizza from house-made ingredients daily from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month we'll host the Holiday Comics Spectacle of Artists on Parade on Thursday, December 13th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Holiday Comics Spectacle of Artists on Parade features 20 Portland comic artists